Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, September 26, 2007. The only September 26, 2007 in the history of humanity. Let's make it the best one humanly possible, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in on this Wednesday webcast, Glenn Klein online, inviting you to sit back and enjoy the next 60 minutes as we discuss all things spiritual, all things religious, all things gospel, and anything else that your friendly neighborhood webcast host wants to talk about, as well as Michael L. Williams, who we are currently waiting for to give us a call. Patrick L. Jones, the engineer and producer extraordinaire of this webcast, will be calling him. Michael is on the road. We're trying to get him in touch with us via his cell phone. So you got me for a few minutes. I talked to Michael earlier this afternoon, and he was well aware of the webcast tonight, obviously. So something has gone awry, but we will keep you posted. But in the meantime, what I would invite you folks to do is email us your questions at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, your questions and comments, and we will obviously field those as they come in. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We've got a lot of good information for you, a lot of exciting news, and now we have the tension of waiting for Michael to call. In the meantime, this would be a perfect opportunity for just you and me to talk. Give us a call on the Glenn Klein online toll-free hotline. We'd love to hear from you. It's going to get a little tedious. I've got lots to say, of course, as I always do, as you beautiful humans know, but it would get a little tedious just to hear me, and this is a perfect opportunity for you to jump on the phone and let me hear from you right now, even before Michael calls, because we do have both phone lines available here in the studio in beautiful Tampa, Florida. 1-800-436-3260 is that number. 1-800-436-3260. Just let me know that you're hearing me loud and clear, and call us with a comment or question at 1-800-436-3260. We've got several emails to get to. We will endeavor to hold off on those until Michael gets with us. You calling Michael, Patty?
Yes.
He's calling Michael. And because I know you guys want to hear what Mike has to say as well. And we do appreciate you being a participant in this webcast. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com with your questions and your comments. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com. And from that point on, we will also be happy to take your phone calls at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. I got an email here from Kim in beautiful Marion, Illinois. By the way, Michael was in Illinois yesterday. He's in Illinois right now, although that's where we think he is. Maybe the rapture happened, and he's been taken away, and we are left behind. Left behind. Tim LaHaye's series of astonishing success. It just goes to show you, you can never underestimate the intelligence of the Christian public. And I, unfortunately, was one of them. It's one of the hardest things for me is to own up to the fact that I used to believe this crap. I mean, I lived it. I didn't just believe it. I lived it. I put everything that I had into it, my entire life, my family, my finances, everything. But, of course, the Left Behind series by Tim LaHaye is all about what happens prior to and after the rapture. It's, interestingly enough, a fictional series that the man has made multiple millions of dollars on. Multiple millions of dollars. So maybe that's where Michael is. He's rapture bound. Anyway, I think Kim was actually at the meeting, but she brings up a good point that I wanted to talk to you guys about. And also, you may be aware of anyway, because we've been communicating this for a while. Kim in Illinois had ordered the CD set, the Golgotha's Secret and the Beyond Belief series a couple months ago, and she has not gotten them. And so Here's what happened. We have had ongoing challenges with the duplication. For any of you guys that have been around for a while, you're very well aware of that. And most recently, a very nice fellow in Michigan, David Manley, took over the duplication. But David had a couple jobs. Everybody, as you guys know, everybody that participates in the Gospel Revolution is a volunteer. Michael, for all practical purposes, is a volunteer. You're truly is a volunteer. Patrick Jones volunteers his time to make this thing go. We want to do something about that eventually. When we have pledge drives, it's strictly to try to pay the bills, the ongoing bills of the duplicating process and Michael's travel and things like that. So anyway, David took over for a while, and it's just, you know, it's overwhelming. It's pretty much a full-time gig. And he did a very, very excellent job for a while, and then it was too much. So after Michael moved to Houston, then all the equipment eventually followed him, and the Freedom Worship Center in beautiful Houston, Texas, where Michael is on staff now, this all happened within the last several months, it just moved into a new facility with a new office where the duplicating equipment is as we speak. It's being set up. It's going to be right there. Michael will be able to supervise it. There's a person at the church that is in Houston that is going to be responsible for getting this stuff out. So hopefully, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise, we will not have this problem again. So Kim and everybody else that's waiting for your CDs or DVDs, if you have not let us know that you are owed something, please email us. Again, the address, webcast@gospelrevolution.com, webcast@gospelrevolution.com, and that will get in the pipeline, and you will get your stuff eventually. And we believe that it will be worth your wait. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Wednesday night, webcast night. We don't have Michael. Now, at this point, this is my like little Jewish neuroses about being concerned as to where he is. Patrick's calling him as we speak because, frankly, this is not like Michael. So I'm wondering what happened to him. He was in transit.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Oh, there, Pat's got him. We're about to find out. Patrick is in contact with him. All right. Well, this is an exciting moment. We're going to find out what is going on with the matador, the troubadour, if you will, Michael Williams. We're going to be putting Michael online momentarily. And by the way, in the meantime, fire off a question or email to us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. And feel free to give us a call. We do have the second line available at 1-800-436-3260. Are you there?
I am here.
Where are you?
I'm in Champaign, Illinois.
What? Did you forget about us?
No, my phone was dead. I had to charge the phone.
So is the phone going to die again, or you got it plugged in?
No, we're okay now.
That's good.
I'm here.
I'm here. I was musing about the possibility that you had been taken up in the rapture and that we had been left behind.
Well, of course you would be.
Now, why would you say such a dastardly thing?
Well, you know, I just know that this is not your time.
That's what John was saying last week. He said,
"Oh, he was, wasn't he?"
Yeah, he said we don't need to take ourselves out. That God can take us out whenever He wants.
Yes, that's true. He did say that.
Well, we're glad that you're okay. I was getting my Jewish nervousness was starting to. You know, just bubble up in my emotions.
Well, I am sorry to that your Jewishness nervous.
That's a Jewish trait, you know. There's a great Jewish term called being a nervous hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's just, and I'm not a nervous hilarious. I'm really not. But, you know, I'm also a realist that, you know, stuff happens. So, well, we're glad.
Yes, stuff does happen.
We're glad you're all right. So you are in Champaign, Illinois. After your meeting last night in Southern Illinois.
That's correct.
And a good time was had by all, I understand. Tell us about it.
Yes, it really was. We had a number of folks there, and my youngest daughter was there with me.
Audrey was
there. Which was a real delight.
Well, yes, when was the last time Audrey heard you speak?
Oh, my. Let's see. You know, I don't really know. I remember the last time she went with me by herself, and in fact, we talked about it there. It was really quite cute, but she was just a little girl at the time, and she decided she wanted to go on a trip with Dad to go speaking, and so we loaded up and took off, and just remember her sitting on the front row and falling asleep, and she asked where we were going, and I said we were going to Pekin, Illinois. And she said, is that like when I'm peeking in mommy's purse? So she actually remembered that. So it was pretty cool.
Pekin, Illinois is spelled like Peking, isn't it?
Yes.
But it's pronounced Pekin. Can you imagine being, who decided that that was going to be the name of Pekin, Illinois? You know, we got to come up with the name of a town. We got to come up with the name of a town. So let's name it after the capital of China.
Well, this is Pekin. So.
isn't there a Peking, Illinois too?
I wouldn't know.
Maybe I'm confused.
But this is Pekin.
It would not be the first time I've been confused. I can tell you that right now. All right, so
how's all the gospel revolutionaries tonight?
Well, we're doing good, but we want to hear more specifics. We're thrilled that now a grown woman, Audrey, was there last night. But you had a good crowd. You had about 30 people, you said.
Yeah.
And there's a growing move there in Southern Illinois. Ironically, that's where you used to pastor back in the day.
Yes, it is. And there were none of those folks showed up. I mean, I think that we would begin to draw some of those. Once I began to, you know, if I go back a couple more times, and Steve had as I said, there was quite a few people there. I'm not that good with numbers, but I think I counted out about 30 people there. And he had one guy there that he had just recently been sharing the gospel with, and after I taught, he motioned for Steve to step outside with him, and they stepped outside, and Steve came back in, and then during our discussion time, he said that his friend had said, you know, I was really doubting this, and I wasn't sure it was true. He said, but now, he said, I think it's right. He said, what am I going to do? So so that question has been asked by many, that's for sure.
This is one of the problems with the gospel, you know, is that it makes so much sense that if people come into it open-minded at all, they're going to come away with the same comments and the same thoughts that this gentleman articulated to Steve, which is, I can't refute this.
Yes, absolutely, and that was his comments, and many of the other people that are talking to the folks there in Southern Illinois, they're very well versed in the gospel, and they are able to articulate it well and with logic, and so it's been I think they've got a lot of good stuff going on there. The crowd was diverse in age, and we had folks there in their 20s, early 20s, and as was my daughter, and all the way up to, I'd say probably we had folks there, I think it was folks there close to 60 years old or so. So anyway, it was just, it was excellent. And everybody just loving on the gospel and letting the gospel love on them.
What specifically did you teach on?
I taught on the issue of judgment. I taught in John 5 and John 12. And Jesus first asserting that whatever he sees the Father do, that's what he does. And whatever he does, he's doing it because that's what the Father does. And what the Father says, he says. And, you know, those analogies that he repeated over and over and over to make sure we got the point. And then, of course, Jesus said, the Father judges no man. And he said, but has committed all judgment into the hands of the Son, and has committed all judgment to the Son.
You know, and of course, the way that that is presented in the evangelical church, Michael, is that Jesus will be coming back to judge the righteous
yes.
and the unrighteous, the just and the unjust. But
that's
not what it means, is it?
No, and then the context, if you just follow the story through, of course, you have to accept the fact that Jesus, after that point, was given all judgment. And, of course, you know, then the church comes up with an out-of-context understanding of the great white throne judgment that God himself is going to judge. Well, they are totally disagreeing with Jesus because Jesus himself said the Father will judge no man. You just can't get it any clearer than that. And then the rest of chapter 5 and then on into chapter 12, of course, Jesus says, now is the judgment of this world, and if I be lifted up, will draw all unto me. So he made it very clear that, and also he said that the Father would judge no man, and so he really kind of, you know, made it clear what he was not going to do himself, because he said, whatever I see the Father do, that's what I do. And he said, the Father judges no man, so we should have gotten a hint that when Jesus went to the cross and all of the things that we prescribe as judgments coming and all of that, we should have known that there was some understanding that would place judgment in another place other than on the human race, either at the hands of God the Father or at the hands of God the Son, because Jesus said, I don't do anything unless I see my Father do it. And he made it very clear, the Father will judge no man. And what I see my Father do, that's what I'm going to do. Now, he did have the choice when he went to the cross as to what was going to happen to all judgment. He could either have poured that judgment out on the earth, or he could take that cup of judgment, as was his pain of having to make that decision. And then, of course, when it came time, he said, not my will, but thine be done. And so it was just, you know, it was a poignant moment for everyone. My own little girl sat there with tears in her eyes during most of the session, hearing the good news, just having it reaffirmed to her heart that she's loved no matter what,
you know,
and that she doesn't have to believe. I mean, she just is. Just having that affirmed to her heart, she says, it's just amazing that I don't have to believe.
Right.
And she just kept going off about it. And she said, you know, that's what makes a person want to believe, is when it's not a requirement.
Well, if Audrey did not believe, she wouldn't have tears in her eyes. I mean, that's a manifestation of believing.
I think so.
Well, and you know, the thing is that if one believes in God and has been reared and trained in judgmentalism, and legalism and condemnation, hearing that, you know, people that believe in God, it's good news to know that you don't have to believe. It's good news that you can do nothing to take away or add to the love of God and the righteousness of God that's already been imputed to the human race.
Absolutely. It is. It is. In fact, it's such stabilizing force that it's just, there is no psychology on earth that has the type of stabilizing force that that knowledge has. And a lot of people step into the gospel and it is so freeing that they have to start dealing with things that they've never dealt with before, but it's because they are free to do it. And people can deal with the, you know, begin to step into realms that they never dreamed that they would ever be in, but all in the process of experiencing what freedom really is.
No doubt. And so many of the people that are part of the gospel revolution that have received the gospel all over the world, if not most of the people, have had a Christian background. You know, Jesus said, "I go to the lost sheep of the household of Israel first, and then to the world." Well, we know that Israel was a forerunner of Jesus. Israel as a whole was not only a type of Christ, but therefore a type of the world, because all are in Christ. But, Michael, the people that are most screwed up on the planet are the religious people. And that.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think by comparison, we could say that we are, you know, my heart is for the lost sheep of the church and the lost sheep of Christianity, because they are definitely lost sheep, because, and they're walking in darkness. You know, we read through the verse. You know, of course, the evangelical Christianity, you know, if I were to ask anybody what is walking in darkness, I know what they would say. Well, it would depend on what their version of morality was, but one would probably say adultery. Well, you're walking in darkness if you are, you know, if it be some form of sin.
Yeah, if you drink, smoke, or chew, or hang around with girls that do,
yes,
you're walking in darkness.
Absolutely.
If you like rock and roll music, you are walking in darkness.
Yes, if you're attending a church that doesn't agree with us, you're walking in darkness.
If you don't speak in tongues, you are walking in darkness.
Yes, you're walking in darkness.
If you don't go to church where preachers go like this all the time, you're walking in darkness.
Do you know what Jesus said walking in darkness is? Do you know, Glenn Klein?
Yes, I know. but share with the assembled. I thought that was a rhetorical question, but share with the masses.
Jesus said that he knew that they were walking in darkness because they didn't know where they were going. That is walking in darkness. Walking in darkness when you don't know where you're going.
You're walking
in darkness doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. Walking in darkness means
you're lost.
You don't know where you're going.
I once was lost, but now I'm found.
That's right.
It's not that God's opinion changed of you. It's just the fact that you know. You found yourself. You found yourself in the righteousness of God. And it's the blind leading the blind. And the blind, of course, representing religious leaders, leading the blind, people that receive their religious instruction. And that is continuing to this very second. It's Wednesday night. There's people in churches and watching Christian television all over the world that are being told that they're walking in darkness, or that the vast majority of humanity is walking in darkness, because they don't pray enough. They don't tithe enough. They don't fast enough. They hang around with the wrong people. They hang around with the wrong things. They watch the wrong movies. They watch the wrong TV shows. It's just a religion of do's and don'ts. And we came through just this last 10 days or so, Michael, the Jewish high holiday season of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are respectively the Jewish New Year, which, by the way, is not biblical. The Jewish New Year is a tradition that's post-Bible, but the Jewish people celebrate this time of year. And Rosh literally means head. in Hebrew, and Hashanah is the year, so it's the head of the year. But according to the Bible, the head of the year was at the Passover time. That's that when God brought the children of Israel out of Egyptian bondage, he said, you're going to count this as the start of the year. Of course, that was the time, also the appointed time, that Jesus was crucified during the Passover. It's a fairly significant time of the year. That happens in the springtime, not now. But then the Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, that is a biblical thing. And you see, Michael, more and more, I watch this thing just grow and grow, that the church, and especially those that are trying to draw money from people, use these seasons of the year to say that if you will give during this time of year, that something extra special will happen for you because this is an appointed season of the year. And and they're talking about the Day of Atonement when the blood of bulls and goats were spilled for the redemption of the nation of Israel, which isn't even done for Israel anymore. And of course it is in the scriptures, it's Old Testament stuff. And they're still talking about it, that if people will somehow activate their faith during this time of year, something extra special will happen with them. That is what we call in Yiddish dreck, garbage, crapola. And but the people, you know, they're into it. I mean, it's amazing how they respond to it. A lot of the Christian networks even have their pledge drives during this time of year to make the same case. This is God's appointed season of blessing. And oh God, I could gag from watching this stuff.
I believe you could.
It ain't true, is it?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's amazing that I was watching Paul White the other day, and they even had the small temple thing set up, and they were saying September the 22nd, I think, was supposed to be the day, and that if you did not send in an offering, you would not go into the Holy of Holies. And she literally said that. And they put that God said either $207 or $2,007, I guess, because it's 2007 now. But I know they're anxious for the years to go up because they can up the dollar a pound every year. But it's like I know they wish they were living in the year 4,000 right now instead of the year 2,000. But you know, it's just wild. I mean, she literally said that God never ever did away with the Day of Atonement. I've watched so much. I mean, I know that there's a whole lot of these things that these guys believe that is just wrong. But then there's those things that are just absolutely corrupt, and that is just corrupt to the core to mislead people in thinking that the Day of Atonement has not been fulfilled, and then to use it to get money out of them. It was mind-boggling. So yeah, they say it's a certain time of the year, but it's amazing they have no time of the year that they don't ask for money.
Right.
But there is a certain time of the year that you'll be blessed if you give, but they promise you'll be blessed equally. They're never going to say you're going to be blessed less the rest of this year when you give than you did on that day. But every day is a special revelation about why today is the day and now is the time, and if you do it right now, and, you know, God spoke to me, God told me that, and if you do this and if you do that, you're going to be blessed. So, yeah, anyway. But the gospel still stands true, thank God.
The gospel goes forth, and a major proponent of the gospel is online on our second line here at the Glenn Klein Online Studio. In the meantime, you folks can email us any questions or comments. We're going to get to the few that we have right now in queue. But let's welcome on the pastor of the Freedom Worship Center in beautiful Houston, Texas, Mr. John Adair. John! Oh. He's coming right now. There he is. Hey, John.
Hey. Hello.
Michael, you cannot hear John right now?
No. Okay. I can't hear either one of you.
Okay, can you hear? Say hello, John.
Hello, John. He said to say hello, John. He didn't say to say hello, Michael. You just cannot follow instructions, I tell you.
more rampant disobedience here on Glenn Klein Online at the Gospel Revolution webcast. All right, so
condemnation.
And no,
wants.
And there is therefore no condemnation. Exactly. So John, Mike, you didn't hear, he's having some dinner in beautiful Fort Worth. How is it out there tonight in Fort Worth? A little hot, a little humid?
It actually it's almost like Florida weather. Really nice. We've got motorcycle buzzing by here. You can probably hear them in the background. But, it's a beautiful down. It's been years I've been up here to Fort Worth, but picked up some friends last night over in Dallas. Mark and Kathy Eaton had a great dinner with them, and really prompts the reason for my call, because I wanted to make sure that we got talking about championsofgrace.com. As you know, over the years, Michael has blown up probably hundreds, if not thousands, of churches, not literally. And left all these fragmented people all over the country longing for fellowship and a longing for a place to belong and wanting to share the good news with their friends and neighbors and even progress a little further into quasi-organized type of sharing and obeying the laws of the land with nonprofit status and all that. So we've been able to put together championsofgrace.com, whereby we can license and ordain and help people with a 501c3 status, which here in the States basically means it allows them to receive donations, and those that are donating can receive a tax write-off. So it gives them the blessing of the IRS. We can help them through the many legalities that come through different ministries. We can help to lower those hurdles and help to just fuel the vision that God's put in their heart and that they have in fulfilling what they'd like to see happen in their neck of the woods, whether it's to organize a weekly or biweekly or monthly organization. And championsofgrace.com is there to support that, to serve that. And one of the things we like to say is we're not here to bring responsibility to people, but help them to be able to respond. And we're not here to bring people accountable, but to help give them the ability to give an account. It's a complete servant-hearted ministry that we think will reunite people that have heard this message over the years, that have been wanting to do something, wanting to belong somewhere, and not knowing how to do that. And in some ways, I guess I hate to use this term, but in some ways, in some people's minds, it legitimizes what we're doing. Even though we don't need that legitimacy, if that is a hurdle that we can remove from people's minds, that let them see, hey, this is something for real, it's something here to stay, it's not fading away, it's not going away, it's not being torn down or kicked aside, but people not only believe this and live it and breathe it, but they want to offer it to the world. And we know there's literally thousands of people out there that are wanting to offer it to the world. And what I mean by that is,
Glenn, if you can hear me, I can't hear anyone.
Did you hear that, Patrick? John, go ahead, continue, I'm sorry.
So it's just a wonderful time. I know Mike is really on fire with it, and I could say anything I want that Mike can't answer because he doesn't know what I'm saying. But I know that he's really on fire with it, truly, because he really feels that many people he's been in contact with over the years, that I've been in contact with over the years, that this is something that can tie us all together in a sense of unity for the specific purpose of sharing the good news.
And can people sign up, John, on the championsofgrace.com website, or they need to contact you guys?
Well, they can contact us through the championsofgrace.com website. There's no signing up to do. They might want to take a look at the member categories. We have different member categories by which we can best serve them. And from there, if they feel like they want to fit in there or they want to fit in somewhere and don't know where, just drop us an email and we'll be happy to go forward from that point. But again, it's just a service-oriented organization that is designed to help people that want to carry the gospel. Maybe they want to set up weekly groups in their home, or they want to do something totally off the charts. We're there to, you know, you've talked with TJ Davis, I think. I know Mike has up in Chicago. He has a fellowship group that meets in his tattoo parlor every Sunday.
Now, we can't have that.
And, you know, he's getting a bunch of flack from people up there because he's, quote, not ordained, even though he went to the cemetery of Bob Jones University. You know, here he is and owns his own tattoo shop, enjoys bringing people in off the street and sharing them with the good news, and they're just giving him a bunch of flack about it. So we just went ahead and ordained him, stood there, you know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you're ordained, go ahead and do it, you know. The only commonality we want this to be, and that it shall always be as long as we're involved, is keeping the unifying factor, which is what Jesus Christ did. He did once, and he did it for all, in all. That's it. We keep the unifying factor, and everything apart from that, you know, do as you wish, believe as you wish to believe. Is there a rapture, not a rapture, pre-trip, post-trip, mid-trip, who cares, where, you know, whatever it is, if there's a flight, I'm on it, whenever it is, I don't know. I don't have any opinion on eschatology, but there are those that are strong in that area. But that's not our unifying factor. You know, do you take communion with wafers or do you take it with bread? Do you take it with real wine or grape juice? How do you want me to take it?
Or not at all.
Or not at all. And
is there a cost associated with this?
A cost. Well, you know, we have a cost. No cost. I thought you said a cross. I was going to say, funny you mentioned that, because we do have a guy that doesn't believe Jesus died on a cross, but he died on a stake.
Right.
And I thought, all right, well, okay, a cross, a stake. Do you believe he died? Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have a problem with that. So, it's just a matter of what did Jesus accomplish on however you want to say he died, and then he rose from the dead, okay? That's the unifying factor. What happened in that day, those 3 days there, that's the unifying factor. As far as the cost goes, the only cost that could possibly be involved is depending on what it is they're wanting to do. This couple that we met with last night over in Dallas, they don't want to start their own 501c3, and they don't want to go through all the legal rigmarole. So what they do want to do is to come under our 501c3, under our nonprofit status. And in that case, the only cost that's going to be involved for them is to pay for the county licensing fee to get a Champions of Grace doing business as their ministry name so that they can open up their bank account. So I think that's a minute $15 fee. They pay that to the county. It doesn't come to us. So no, there's no cost involved for us to serve you. There might be cost involved for things that you want to do. And
right.
Maybe we can, or maybe we can't help you with that, but it's not a service fee to us. We're in hopes that people that do come part of this see the vision, see what's behind it, and do help cover some of our overhead costs, but it's not a requirement.
All right, my brother. Did you already have dinner?
Yes, we finished up dinner. I'm walking down the street here in beautiful downtown Fort Worth, Texas, and on my way over to Dallas.
What did you have for dinner tonight?
We ate, Glenn, at the Texas da Brasil Cascaria, which is, I don't know if you've ever been to one of these Brazilian restaurants, but you sit down and you have this ticket on your table, green on one side, red on the other, and as long as you're wanting to eat, they keep bringing delicacies of meat and chicken and pork, and all varieties of meat that you can think of, right off the skewer to your table.
Wait a minute, pork? You can't be eating pork?
And eat and just, you know, yeah, sorry, my brother. We busted.
But, you've offended Glenn, though.
Oh, now you heard that, huh?
He's Jewish again tonight.
Yeah, I'm always Jewish. I'm always Jewish, even when I have a barbecue pork sandwich.
Well, gentlemen, I've got to run. My guests are waiting. I'm going to keep them waiting here. But
thanks for the info, John.
Type in and send this down the line. Look forward to seeing you when you get back home, Michael.
Yes, we'll see you soon.
All right. Love you guys.
Love you, brother.
Love you, John.
From another mother. All right. There's John Adair, the pastor of the Freedom Worship Center, where Michael is on staff as a teacher, and the founder of just what we need, Michael, another denomination.
Yay. So we can denominate.
I didn't ask John, but are they going to license and ordain women?
Of course.
Well, I can't be a part of that. I mean, you know, the Bible says, that women should not speak up in church. The Bible says.
It does say that.
Are they going to ordain gay people even?
No, I would not be the slightest bit surprised.
Well, I'm okay with that. Because, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, good. I'm glad you're okay with gay people.
My son Isaac said to me yesterday, he said, Pop, he said, my teacher, Mr. So-and-so is gay. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because he stands a certain way, he talks a certain way. And I said, that doesn't mean he's gay. He said, yeah, but he told Mrs. Smith that he was gay. I said, well, but he's probably gay. I said, I have a lot of gay friends, Isaac. He said, you do? I said, yeah. And I said, so do you. And he said, I do? And then he looked at me and goes, well, they might not know they're gay yet. And I said, well, that's probably true. But, yeah, that's good stuff. All right, so that's John. And if you're interested, just go to championsofgrace.com. And here's new information for you, Michael. There's also a reference to Champions of Grace now on the gospelrevolution.com website.
Glorious.
Yes, this just happened this evening. Timmy Pruitt taking care of that. And so we will be...
our Timmy.
We will be having information about that and how it relates to the Gospel Revolution. This is actually going to replace the GRIP program. And a lot of people, we've got a question about that coming up, as a matter of fact, have wanted to know how to get in touch with people in their area of like-mindedness. So we're going to utilize the Champion of Grace program for this purpose. So just stay tuned for information about that. But there is a reference now on the gospelrevolution.com webpage to championsofgrace.com. So that's all good stuff. But let's get to a question, shall we, Michael?
Things
are moving right along here.
Enough of this frivolity.
This came from, exactly. this actually came last week after last week's webcast from Dina from Noblesville, Indiana. Actually, it was during last week's webcast. We said we would get to it tonight. This is Dina from Noblesville, and she says, hi. Mike, does God talk to us through prophecies or word of knowledge through other people?
Definitely. Of course, my perception of God's communication to us is definitely through the gifts of the Spirit, and such as word of knowledge, word of wisdom. But these, in my perception, are not, they're not things that God, you know, we see this image of God in heaven beginning to talk and us listening, but in my understanding of the gospel, that God has deposited all of his wisdom, the word of wisdom, word of knowledge, inside of us, and when we hear a voice in our head or in our heart, if you will, that is something that is so intuitive that you know that it's not knowledge that you had, but you come up with it. I do believe that that is, and a lot of people interpret that as, well, I heard the voice of God. Well, I don't espouse to that. I believe that God spoke to us through his Son, Jesus Christ, and now that he has placed in us all of these things. Now remember, I believe that all things that God has and is has moved out of heaven and into us. So I'm not waiting to hear a voice. I don't need to hear a voice to get guidance and instruction. The guidance and instruction I need is already in my heart. It's already there. It's like my DNA. It's a part of me. And there are times, And you're going to have to search out for yourself and decide for yourself as to anything that might cause that to be more active or less active in your life. I think different people have different proclivities to certain parts of the gifts and the fruits of the Spirit, as far as them being most predominant in their walk and in their life. But yes, I do believe that, but I don't believe that it is something that we are getting from outside of us. I believe it's something we're getting from inside of us.
That's an excellent explanation. And so what about when the charismatic or the Word of Faith guys are out there just continually with prophecies or words of knowledge that somebody in their television audience is being healed of cancer right now, or they give very personal prophecies in their meetings over and over and over again, and this is what people come to hear, a, quote, word from the Lord. What about meetings like that?
Well, the thing of it is that I've experienced that myself, and I know that there are certain things that connect with 99 9/10% of all people on earth. So a lot of the times what we have connected is being the word of faith, word of wisdom or word of knowledge for someone, or even a prophecy. But remember, prophecy now, according to Paul, is only for edification and comfort, and it's not for foretelling the future. As we walk in that, I really do believe that becomes a part of us. But it also can be that we just have we definitely have people. Let's take one of the things that you brought up on the television. I mean, my goodness, there's always going to be somebody there who is responsive to the type of hypnotic, I want to be a part of this, and therefore I got what they said, and that was all about me. And I'm just not impressed with it, at all. I don't believe that it is something that is a part of even the word of knowledge or the word of wisdom. It just seems to be a buckshot, if you, I think they could put any human being on there without any claim to anything and say, just come up with things. And I think you'd get this the very same response from people claiming to have benefited from it.
And there seems to be a certain level, regardless of whether in the church or in other television programs or whatever, these mediums and things, that there seems to be something that people pick up on. But you wouldn't say that type of knowledge is referenced in the Bible, that type of ability.
That there is a supernatural knowledge that they've picked up on.
Yeah. These people that get things from the dead supposedly and things like that. These things do not necessarily come from biblical gifts. They're people that pick up on stuff, and that either they are gifted that way.
Right. It can just be a very intuitive person,
right.
Or it could be. I mean, a person does not have to acknowledge Jesus or the Bible to be gifted at something. I mean, because they're already righteous enough to have any gift that God has. And those gifts, I think that we're all way more gifted with the things of the Spirit than what we know or what we're comfortable to share with others. So many times, and I do believe that many times it just simply is just, there's so much mind games. You have to accept the fact that the mind is a very powerful and tricky tool. When an illusionist can get on TV and float out from the 20th floor of a building inside a hotel atrium and float off of the 20th floor with cameras and people all around him, and no wires and float to the floor. And he definitely calls himself an illusionist, you know. And our mind can't understand how that just happened. I mean, it's obvious the mind is a very powerful thing, and people know how to manipulate the mind. So, but is there real? Yes, there is. There is real. But the word of knowledge and the word of wisdom can operate anywhere, the grocery store or wherever you are, and through anyone, believer or unbeliever. So, you know, it's because all are empowered with the gifts of the Spirit are in all of us, and as to whether or not we are able to be in tune with that is another thing.
Amen. So hopefully that helps you, Dina, and feel free to email us at any time. Taking your emails tonight at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. webcast@gospelrevolution.com. This is the place to get your questions answered, folks. Excuse me. And I encourage you guys to email us with any comments or questions you have. We've got this one coming in from John Clark, Michael. He says, what is the confusion that Paul seems to be having with waiting for this last trump? How do we figure what Paul says is true and what is not? That's a good question in and of itself. He says that, I see this seed falling into the ground as Christ and all of us with him already. In saying the New Testament is a law-grace debate, is Paul also sometimes caught up in the law side as well? The fact that he fell for the apostles' request that he go down to the temple led to the end of his ministry except for some letters, he says. His idea of being all things to all people kind of backfired on him. My heart tells me that if I'm not what someone wants me to be to them, they can just live with who I am already, not some front that tries to please everyone. I did that most of my life, which has led to problems with those closest to me. I rather like walking in freedom from that, yeah? Thanks for all your great messages. That's John Clark. So he brings up some good points. I mean, first of all, Michael, how do we know what Paul is saying is true and when it's not? And did Paul get caught up as a legalist sometimes, and specifically the time when he was convinced to go down to the temple?
Well, of course, I mean, you know, Paul admitted that he was that he wanted to grow in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He admitted it was a path. He admitted it was a journey, and. The issue of, you know, in particular of his question about the last trump, you know, Paul did bring that up in two places in his writings. I think a lot of people question whether 1st and 2nd Thessalonians is actually written by Paul, but even if it is, Paul does not give a time-specific reference as to that. He just tells about the event. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, he does make it very time specific as to the last trump. And as he continues in the last part of chapter 15, he points that at the time as that when the law is dealt with. The last trump is when the law was dealt with. And so, yeah, it's I think that that's actually very clear, and the thing of it is it's not our job to figure out which of these things by comparing Paul's teachings to even Paul's teachings or Paul's teachings to John and James, but it's our job to look at the scriptures and see which the scriptures, according to all of those guys and Jesus, was the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. To search those things out to see whether or not they're true.
And let us remember that Paul was the one that had Timothy circumcised, for God's sake.
Yes, and so, you know, I certainly do agree that Paul was growing in grace, obviously growing in grace himself, and that I believe that Paul had the greatest revelation of the gospel of any of the disciples. In fact, most any Christian today has a greater revelation than the disciples did for the first 15 years after the resurrection. And you may have had a greater revelation than the disciples most throughout their entire lives, because the disciples were offering animal sacrifices during the,
but with all due respect to the revelation that Christians have today, you know that if there were people, if there was an opportunity to sacrifice animals today, you know there'd be Christians doing that, and you know there would be leaders trying to make a buck on that.
And that's quite possible. But there are a lot of Christians who do know that animal sacrifice has been done away with. They would not participate. But there are some that would think that by trying to identify with Israel in that aspect, that they would be doing the right thing.
But the disciples were still sacrificing animals until the temple was destroyed in 70 AD.
Yes, and also, they did not even know that the gospel was even supposed to be preached to the whole world. For many years after the resurrection, it took a vision and a sheet being let down from heaven saying, "Don't call unclean that which I have cleansed." And I think that they still didn't get the full message. If it was accurately recorded what was spoken during that particular vision, he said, "Do not call unclean that which I have cleansed." And they talked about it as though, wow, Gentiles can be cleansed too. And they didn't even know it was possible. But that's not what the revelation was brought to them, was that the Gentiles have already been cleansed. And it was a great revelation to them that it was even possible. My goal is to grow in grace the rest of my life. I want to understand to a greater extent for clarity for my own heart and to be able to present the gospel to others, with as great a clarity as possible. And Paul definitely was a human being who, just as I am, who continues to grow in grace and in understanding of the full work of the cross. Because no matter how long, it's so profound, no matter how long we live on this earth, we'll never know the full scope, I don't think, of the work of the cross. But thank God we can know the borders and the outline. We don't have to be just flung into thoughtless space. But we do understand that the gospel of peace, gospel of grace, is the parameters for understanding the gospel. And when we're looking at anyone's writings, the Bible or elsewhere, we have to go to the scriptures and see whether or not these things are really true. And again, those things are the law, the Psalms, and the prophets.
No doubt. And so that's the answer to the question about when is Paul right and when is Paul wrong. I mean, if Paul agrees with himself on the gospel and on the grace and the peace of God, he's right. And if he doesn't, you can make that judgment. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that Paul would not anymore, and certainly we would never recommend somebody getting circumcised in order to think they're doing something righteous and allowing them to be put in good standing with God.
Mm-hmm. Or even think of future judgment. I mean, if anyone perceives that Paul is teaching that, I for one would say, according to the scriptures, you are wrong, because the scriptures never foretold of several phases of judgment. It said that Jesus would come and he'd take the judgment for the whole world, and righteousness would flood the earth, and that would be it. That the gospel of it very plainly tells us that once God brings his covenant of peace to the earth, he said that the covenant of peace will never be removed. So anyone, I don't care if it was Paul, I can go back to the scriptures. I can go back to Isaiah, and Isaiah said that once the covenant of peace is manifested, he said, "And the covenant of my peace shall never be removed." Never. So anyone that prophesies, teaches about any future judgment on any individual, on any nation, any group of people, or upon this planet, or even after this life is over with, I can tell them the scriptures say you are wrong. Yeah, but it says in Revelation. I don't care what it says in Revelation. The scriptures say that is incorrect, that the covenant of God's peace shall never be removed. Jesus didn't say, go read the book of Revelation if you want to know the truth. Jesus didn't say, read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John if you want to know the truth. Jesus didn't say, read Paul's teachings as opposed to Peter, James, and John's teachings. He said, study the scriptures, and he made it very clear as to what those were.
Right.
So when I go to the prophets, you know, you just can't get any clearer than that. And the covenant of peace shall never be removed. It's just as clear as it can be.
Amen. That's a good way to wrap it up. We've got questions still that we'll get to next week from Marianne in Saskatchewan and also from PJ in Indiana. And so stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, for those next week. And during the course of the week, as you're listening to this on the archive, feel free to fire away emails. We will get to them all, and that's what we do. We just go through them. And if you don't hear yours addressed on a particular webcast, just log on the next week, either live or on the archive, and we will get to those, we promise. So
yes, we will.
And speaking of the book of Revelations, I just encourage people to get Michael's teaching on his insight onto what the book of Revelations is all about. I mean, Michael, that has never been explained better to me than your perspective on that. And we've talked about it a lot on the webcast, but this was a revelation and a vision that John got of what the wrath that would be poured out on the earth, if, as you said earlier in the webcast, if Jesus had chosen not to go to the cross and not to take the cup of God's wrath himself.
Yes.
So.
Yes, that is a very clear vision, and it's like I told the folks, you know, I love looking at the book of Revelation like I love looking at the law. I love to see what curses I am not going to ever, ever have put on me by God. And so I love reading the law and its curses because I know for sure God will never do that to me. And I love reading the book of Revelation because I know it will never happen.
According to the scriptures.
According to the scripture.
That's awesome stuff. Well, so you're headed back to Houston, and
yes.
Safe travels, and we will talk to you next week. We appreciate your time. Glad that your phone got charged finally.
Yes, I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
That's all right. It was well worth it.
Oh, thank you.
All right, folks, during the week, let us hear from you at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Always please keep it brief, and we appreciate the folks that emailed this week and did keep it brief, but also include where you're writing from, because that is always very exciting. And as we talked about earlier with John Adair about the Champions of Grace, this is going to be an opportunity for us to keep track of everybody and be able to direct people to people in their area that have received the gospel and who are a part of the gospel revolution. I want to thank Patrick L. Jones for producing and engineering, spinning the dials, and dealing with all the technical ends of things. I want to thank you for listening. Until next Wednesday, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!